cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're recording this on Tuesday evening, May the 16th. Still in early part of the season, but we are about a quarter of the way through, last I looked. And Maddie Davis is not here today. We have two gentlemen to fill his shoes. One of them, you may know, I know him well because I think he's one of the best baseball writers out there. Somebody I respect very much, quite multi-talented, an East Coast fella. He's a three-time FSWA baseball award winner, writes for Roto Baller, does some editing for AM at New York, beat writer, host of Catcher's Corner, and you can follow him at Samski, NYC, S-A-M-S-K-I, NYC. It's Eric Samulski. Eric, what's going on, brother?
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, of course. And I've been on Catcher's Corner before with you and your co-host, Sammy. And speaking of Sammy's, we have an OG Sammy, one of we were talking about before the show. When I first started listening to podcasts and when I learned about podcasts, I believe his was like him and Doug Thornburn were pretty much the only ones on the market. He's an old friend. He's the co-host of the Gilcast, a football live stream over on Roto Grinders. He's a two-time FSWA award winner. He's a poker stud, plays a lot of it. He's good at it, wins money. He hosts a poker podcast called Read 'Em and Weep. And he's also my favorite comedic fantasy writer from back in the day. I wish he still wrote baseball stuff, maybe one day in the future. At Sammy Reed FI on Twitter. Sammy Reed, what's up, bro?
Yo, what's happening? They discontinued the humor writing award for the SWA, the FSWA, and I just like mic dropped. I'm like, okay, well, I'm done with this.
Yeah, no, it was perfect because yeah, you were the last winner of it, and you win it back to back years.
No, I won it once, and then they discontinue it, and then the next year I won, I think it was Best Ongoing Football Series, something like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, Sammy, we've had you on before on the show, I want to say frequent guests, because we don't usually do guests, we kind of do like the co-host thing, but I thought it'd be nice to have a three-person booth here today, a lot to talk about, but first thing I wanted to touch on were your leagues. What you're playing, how you're doing. Eric, what kind of stuff did you enter this year? Do you have like a standard home league you've been playing in for a long time? Any NFBC?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say a long time. I have a standard home league. It's been about 6 years now, I'd say. A lot of my childhood friends kind of threw their hands up with baseball a little bit. So like the leagues I had like when I was young disbanded. So that's a 12-team OPS league, which is interesting because most of the other stuff I do is obviously, you know, it's like NFBC or standard 5x5. So switching to OPS is always a little bit of a mind, just a like a crazy kind of comparison there. I do some NFBC leagues. I try not to go like too crazy. There's only so many fab leagues I can do. So I mix in a couple, you know, draft and holds with an OC and, you know, some qualifiers. And then this is my first year in tout. I'm doing AL tout this year.
Oh, wow.
So that's been a pretty cool experience. And I'm in turf this year for the first time, which, you know, turf, glarf, barf, is one of those world leagues. So it's fun to do that kind of industry league stuff and just kind of expand the NFBC portfolio a little bit.
So you're in the AL tout. It was an auction, right? And you got to do that live. How was that experience?
It was fun. I think, you know, you sit in a room with people who you have read and listened to, and also many of whom have been in that league for multiple years. And, you know, it can be a little not intimidating in the sense of like, I don't trust my ability to be there. I don't believe in my ability to be there, but like, they've all done it before. They don't have to like have a feel of the room. They know each other. They can read each, especially when you're doing an in-person draft, they can kind of read each other's tendencies a little bit more, where I felt I was like flying blind a little bit and just trying to do the best I can. And I'm sure, you know, Sammy can talk about that too, from like the poker background. Like if you can get a good read on who's around the table, you can take advantage of some situations. So I felt like I was kind of playing catch up in that regard. But I was really happy with the team I drafted that just happened to have Robbie Ray and Tyler Malley on it. So that's super interesting right now.
Damn, yeah, that sucks. My Tout Wars team, I did the draft and hold. That drafted, I think it started in February, towards the end of February. But my four pitchers were Tyler Glasnow, Carlos Rodon, Luis Severino, and I forgot a fourth. Or he wasn't my fourth pitcher, but it was like the sixth was Carrasco. So yeah, it's been rough sledding in that league. Sammy, what about you, man? What do you? I know you're on the NFBC streets, and you know you got your home stuff, and you go up and you do the original Barf League, right? The Bay Area. You're like a founding member guy. You're like pre-Dave, pre-LTD.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. We all get together at the Rec Room in San Francisco, do shots in Lorne Michaels' memory because he was one of the original bandmates of that league as well. Kind of similar to Eric, man. I actually had these home leagues that went 20 years, and this year they actually disbanded. You know, I think it's the reality of, you know, getting to be around 40 and having kids and stuff. It's like fantasy baseball for anybody but the most degenerate and hardcore is just like kind of a no-go when you start getting deeper in your career and, you know, kids, etc. And so we actually disbanded the leagues, which is very sad, but just kind of a reality of life. And for me, that just means like straight up NFBC. That's like all I'm doing this year. And it's kind of nice to just have one focus, right? Like my home leagues used to be like daily transactions, kind of like Eric's. We used, you know, all sorts of wonky categories, not even wonky, but like OBP, slugging percentage, save plus holds, quality starts, like things like that. It was very customized. And, you know, it's kind of nice just to go into like one format and focus on it. So this year, like I'm really trying to do as few leagues as possible and do them at a really high intensity, right? So it's like two mains, one of which is with our boy Yancey Eaton. It's his first foray into the main event. I kind of like pulled his ass into it. I was like, come on, bro. Nice. Like the kid's been crushing like small stakes, like NFBC 50s. And then he got into some OCs last year. And I'm like, dude, you're ready. Like just go. So we're doing a main together. And then I have like a main event qualifier, TGFBI, I think two DCs and, you know, Raz and, you know, stuff like that. But it's really like a couple mains, a main event qualifier, and let's go hard.
Did Yancey
convince... It's wild switching formats like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like even anything in the NFBC, when you go from like 12 to 15, it's such a drastic difference in terms of the player pool. And, you know, Vlad, I know you know this too, when you write the, you know, the like fab recommendations. Not just the player pool, but like what you're bidding on players or, you know, the risks you need to take. And then when you also double on top of that, like switching from an average league to an OPS league or something like that. I spend so much of my time draft prepping and season prepping the 5x5 stuff that I feel like, oh, you know, I use projection systems. And, you know, if I just switch the data points to being an OPS league, it'll just kind of recalculate the values and I'll have the OPS stuff for my home league drafts. And then you get out of those drafts and you're like, I think I screwed this up, man. Like, I think I just thought it would be the same thing. And I just flipped the.
Yeah, no, because it changes like, everything. It changes like all the scarcity and everything of things exactly. Too, right?
And then like, it's not only an OPS league, but it's a 4 outfielder league instead of 5. So my bench has like 3 outfielders on it because I see a guy and I'm like, how is nobody picking up Lane Thomas? Obviously, I'm going to pick up Lane Thomas. And then you're like, I have too many outfielders. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I like having the home league. If I just got down to 5x5s, it might make my head spin a little less. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge.
Yeah, I enjoy predominantly playing on NFBC. The only other sites that I'm on is the Tout Wars that we mentioned, and that's a draft and hold, so I'm not worried about Fab over there. So I'm essentially just doing Fab on one site. I do have the 15s and the 12s, and it's really funny how that works. Is all my attention is on, you know, the 15s for the most part, and on 12s I'm just kind of just throwing things in, trying to be careful not to make bad drops because it's very possible. But it's crazy because in the 12 team OCs, there are probably people playing there that don't do 15s and they're spending like they're in 15s. It's really wild to me. Some of the numbers I'm seeing and honestly, like I would say in my 12 team OCs, I have maybe between 300 to 400 left and I have some of the most money in my leagues. Like I have people and it's not just what's his name? Man, I'm blanking the teacher, the guy that spends all his Everly. Heberlig. Yeah. So it's not only him, One Eye Jack, with like, you know, under $50, but it's a lot of people spending a, you know, a lot of money. And when, you know, and I see that down, it's nice. It's nice to have the hammer. On the flip side, in my 15s, I've got really sharp players. By the way, Mike Major, who was leading the NFBC main event for literally the first 5 weeks of the season. I mean, he doesn't really need to spend money. So I'm sitting there with like 250. He's got 800, and that hurt. You know, it's a little tilting. It doesn't feel good knowing that the guy has the hammer for, you know, the entire season.
Yeah, he's just going to fucking own you the rest of the season. So brutal.
Yeah, it doesn't feel. By the way, Sammy, you that league with Yancey, did he convince you to get Rays? Do you guys have some Rays on there? Not that you needed convincing, but like, do you have any?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, we started off Cole and Max in our first two picks, and then we went Arozarena. So, nice. Yeah, so Arozarena has been super good, but
pressure.
You know, actually, on my solo main event, I have way more Rays. Like, I have Paredes and I have Yandy Diaz, and you know, those guys just like late rounds have been complete smashes. So, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't convince him to draft a lot of Padres. So, we're doing all right. Yeah,
so far. No, I mean, and you know, those guys will be fine. It's just like the high draft capital, I think, for the most part, is what it is. But man, like, you know, I have no Tatis. And it was just a stand I made, and I knew it was a dangerous one. And I mean, he's awesome. I think as long as he stays healthy, he'll probably return first round value. But that team will get going at some point. You know, I don't think the Dodgers will pull enough far enough away where the Padres won't be a threat. And I do kind of see them getting back up there into, you know, the second spot at least.
Let's pray, man. San Diego is a very underrated cursed baseball town, like sports town in general. The town has never won a single championship in anything. Like, we came so close with the NCAA basketball championship, didn't get there. Like, San Diego's never won anything. It's brutal.
But you know what? You got a nice balance there in life because the burritos, man. Like, nobody has burritos that you guys have.
The weather, the burritos, the beaches.
Uh-huh. It's the best, man. San Diego's amazing, the best city. Oh, yeah. So both of you guys, all three of us, were relatively new dads, you know, a few years in, a couple years in some cases. Eric, wanted to ask you, obviously you work, you're busy, you know, young kid at home. How has that affected your content production, creativity, and just your fantasy play in general? Has it at all?
Yeah. So the content production is definitely down significantly. You know, I used to love doing multiple like videos a week, and videos are just really time consuming to plan, script, film, edit, all that sort of stuff. So I'm kind of down to like, you know, one short video that doesn't involve me on camera and one article a week. And if I can get my 9-to-5 job stuff done, and, you know, I can call it a day at 5 and there happens to be, or 4:30 and there happens to be a little bit of work I can do before I go, you know, pick my kid up from daycare. Like, you try to like cram in a little bit of an article, but it's really just kind of trying to prioritize on the content side, which sucks. Cause there's a lot of stuff that I think I used to dig into a little bit more that I'm not able to as much now. And I like putting out content. I like, you know, hearing what people are talking about and trying to, you know, provide some semblance of either answers or shine spotlight on certain things. And that was always fun to like latch onto an idea and just have the time to run with it. And then I'd say like, I watch far less baseball right now than I used to. And that's just the nature of like, you know, bedtime and, you know, like bath bottle book right now is like all like right when 7 PM, like first pitch is happening. And then we eat dinner. And then, you know, you get the night games and, you know, like I'm a Red Sox fan and they were playing on the West Coast. And you're like, all right, it's 10:10 first pitch. He's going to get up at 6. There's no such thing as sleeping in. Like, how many innings could I really watch before? Like, and you just kind of like weigh that stuff. So I'm trying to use like MLB TV as much as possible and watch starts after the fact. But it is kind of like playing catch up pretty consistently right now.
Yeah, Sammy, how about you? And especially like on Sunday, you got all that fab to make and you've got family things to do. And, you know, the wife is like, right? I mean, it's not just me. The wife is like, again? It's like, hey, you know my schedule. I've been doing this for like how many years? It's Sunday. I have this deadline. I need to get these picks in. And then, you know, it just is how it is.
I think this is closet why maybe subconsciously you've decided to like blow all your fab really early, yeah. Vlad, so that you have less to do on Sundays these days, which is frankly sharp. I mean, I'll say this. I think the reality of kind of the stage of life I think we're all kind of like in is when you get to this spot, everything becomes a little more intensive, right? Your career is more intensive than it's been, your relationship, your marriage, you know, it's not like when you were 20 and you're just fooling around with girls, right? You have kids, so you need to, you know, step up and be a good dad and like spend quality time with them, because the reality is that time with them is really fleeting, right? These young ages that the kids are at, man, it goes away so fast. Like Eric, you got a really little one. I have two kids, they're 3 and 1, and it is insane how like you're just like, whoa, like you were just this and now you're this. And so it, basically what you need to do is allocate your time responsibly, right? And I don't know about you guys, but there have been so many things I used to mess around with that I don't anymore, because you essentially have to prioritize like work, life, relationships, friends, and then and your kids, and there's not a lot of time left. So it's like, what are you going to do with that little bit of time? And for me, you know, I don't do a lot of the things that I used to do that I really enjoy, like creating content. I've essentially stopped, right? I still do the Gil Cast for Roto Grinders, but I don't do the read option anymore. Me and Doug, you know, Doug had 3 kids, and it's like we don't do the Baseball Holics Anonymous pod anymore. And so it's, you kind of just have to pick and choose. For me, you know, like you said, Vlad, I play a lot of poker. That's my main side passion. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to allocate some free time to this. I'm going to have to cut somewhere. And for that, for me, that was content creation. So, you know, it kind of is what it is, but you got to make those tough choices as you kind of get into this stage.
Yeah, I do think it is those tough choices. And like you said, I mean, it's more like I'd rather have the FOMO of like the article that I thought would be fun to, you know, write that I didn't write than, you know, passing up a Saturday or Friday afternoon, you know, with my wife and kid out at the playground or something like that. And, you know, my wife is great about it. Like we kind of like have this semi routine right now because she's not a huge sports fan, but she loves wings and beer. And so there's like a sports bar around the corner from us, and they have TVs outside now, which was like a post pandemic thing. So on Wednesdays when there's day baseball, like we pick, you know, my son up at daycare, and we bring his dinner with us when we scoop him, and we just go sit at a table outside, and there are games on, and we hang out and we feed him. And that's like, like with those brief moments where you feel like you can kind of get a little bit of everything. And I think it's just trying to find little bits like that where like, maybe I'm not, you know, locked in 24/7, but I make sure I'm locked in enough. And I make sure that if I'm only going to put out one article a week, it's well-researched, so I know what I'm talking about. And instead of trying to know everything about everything, I'm just going to know a lot about the stuff that I'm trying to put out into the world.
The coolest thing is my almost 2-year-old daughter walks in and she just starts yelling, baseball, which is great. And
mine does the same thing, only she says football. And I'm like, no, honey, that's baseball.
That's hilarious. And I have this cool little thing that only you guys can see, but it's a Vin Scully microphone I got from a game, and you press it and different things come out, like, and, you know, different sayings. And they just continuously press this thing. And one of them is, you know, it's time for Dodger baseball. And they just love it. They'll just sit there all day and just like press on it. You know, it's fantastic, man. So this growing age, and it'll be interesting to see like how they, yeah, how, what sports they'll be interested in, and all this stuff is just so fun. And I think I'm too far away from thinking like, will they get into fantasy? You know, and that's right. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I necessarily want my son. I'd rather him like, you know, maybe just like a responsible dad in me. I'd rather him be like, you know, concentrating on like important school stuff or whatever, rather than, you know,
do something productive with your life. Don't be a fantasy geek like us.
Yeah.
Yeah,
man. And again, yeah. Fights with his friends about who had a bad trade or whatever. You don't need it.
Yeah. So, switching gears real quick, I wanted to ask you guys about, I mean, it's not rookie pitcher gate because there's no scandal here, really, but there's a lot of there's a lot of interesting things this season in terms of this constant influx every single week of a new stud prospect rookie pitcher coming in and us wanting to spend funds on him. And you know, I've talked about it on different podcasts, both as a guest and on this show. How do we decide? Like what makes us, you know, what makes someone be the person that is making the smart, responsible decisions on these? Like, how do you decide when to pounce on them? Like, is there like a process specifically that you have when deciding? Do we let biases get involved? Like, you know, hey, I really knew or liked, you know, Tanner Bibee, or, you know, I'm a Marlins fan, you know, Yuri Perez, been watching him. And like, what are all like the factors that you consider? And do you guys consider yourselves making smart decisions and having a strong process with it? Or are you kind of like a lot of people and just kind of going with the flow and the gut, so to speak?
Eric, you go first on this, man. I got a lot of thoughts as somebody who kind of just spent a lot of money on Yuri Perez this last week.
Sure. I would say I go way more on the cautious side of it. I think historically speaking, rookie pitchers don't hit far more often than they do hit with these mid-year call-ups. There's a guy in my home league who, you know, consistently on the text chain, which is another thing about home leagues, that why it takes up so much of your time, because there's just so much time texting each other about trades and games and whatever. But he refers to rookie pitchers like this as baby arms. And he talks about how the baby arms never have enough like stamina. They never have enough consistency. And the truth of the matter is, like, I kind of think that's right. You're going to get these blow up starts from guys. And when you have somebody like, you know, Mason Miller or Yuri Perez, who we feel pretty comfortable about saying they're probably only going to throw 70 to 80 major league innings this year, given what they've done in the past, that like those blow up outings, which are going to happen because you've got a young pitcher adjusting to major league hitting, I think they hamper you a little bit more. And then you add in the fact that like everybody is going gaga over them and the price is much higher than you would get. And you have somebody like, you know, Bailey Ober going for 10 times less than, you know, I forget who the big rookie was that same week. I think it might have been Bibee, right? And I think I'd rather have Ober this year. Like, I don't really know. If anything, they're pretty close. So I lean toward caution, and then I try to watch the starts before I make any bids, because I don't know that like, there's no process behind like I'm right more often when I watch, but at least I can go into it not just having numbers behind it, but I can go into it saying I saw the numbers, I saw what, you know, he did, I watched it, and, you know, having played and been around baseball my whole life, like, I trust what I see. And at least then if it doesn't hit, I trusted my gut, I saw the numbers, I trusted what I saw, I thought there was something dynamic there that was going to work. And if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. But like, that's why I was in on McClanahan the year he came up. It was like, I saw the numbers, I watched the start, and I was like, okay, the breaking balls are great, even though they weren't performing great right away. 99, 100 from the left side. Like, I'm willing to take the gamble here because there was something about watching him that I felt good about. And I liked Yuri Perez. I didn't bid high enough, but like, that would be one of the guys where I'm like, this is pretty legit right here.
And before we ask Sammy, is there anybody that you splurged on? And then also, does the organization itself have any influence in your decisions? Like a team like Tampa, Cleveland, Houston, that usually have good pitching programs, they're in good pitching home parks. Does any of that influence you?
Yeah, I think it does. I didn't splurge. I got some keep them honest, because I've been doing, you know, like we're talking about doing 12s. I have a few in the OCs. The bids are a little bit less drastic than in the, you know, the mains and TGFBI 15 teamers, whatever. I had some keep them honest bids for Taj Bradley and Bryce Miller that were like low, like 130, 140. So I picked up a few shares there without splurging too high. And the Bryce Miller thing was watching him. I mean, I understand people are like, oh, he's way overperforming his you know, met his X stats and all the peripherals, and it's going to come crashing down. And it might, but I mean, I watch it and I felt like he was in total command of what he was doing on the mound. the results have backed it up early, but I felt like there was kind of a poise and a confidence with everything he was doing. And I bid, I have some low amount of Gavin Stone, and that's also watching him. I thought the first start was actually better than the numbers suggest. I thought he had some tough breaks, and then that's a Dodgers thing, right? Like, I think there's going to be a spot. I think that, you know, whether it's Gonsolin, Syndergaard, whatever, there's going to be innings come summer. And I trust that organization to develop pitching and put pitchers in the best position to succeed, kind of like I trust Tampa. They may screw Taj Bradley around, but I think he's still getting 130 innings in the majors this year is my what my gut says. And maybe that's just all going to come from the summer on. And I trust that team. I trust what they do with pitching. And so I lean with those guys.
How about you, Sammy?
Well, let me just tell you. So kind of strategically, I agree a lot with Eric. Like, I do not believe in spending $300 on a player. I don't even believe in spending $200 on a player. Like, where I feel like you get the most bang for your buck in Fab is spending $20 to $50 on a ton of players throughout the season, and you're going to hit – it's like the NFL draft, you know what I mean? Like, we – are so bad at actually predicting who's going to be good and who's not that, you know, the more shots on goal that you take, the better off you're going to do. And if you blow a ton of money on one guy, it's like, dude, it's the whole kit and caboodle. And I'll echo what Eric said. I mean, you know, somebody like Yuri Perez went for, you know, over 300 in a lot of leagues. You know, who the best value of all these guys is going to be is Louis Varland, right? Who is like under $100. And is he four times less than somebody like Yuri Perez? Probably not. In fact, almost certainly not. So strategically, that's what I believe in. That said, do as I say, not as I do, because I have this crazy Molotov cocktail of FOMO and desperation in my mains this week. You know, like one of my mains, I lost Molly and Rasmussen in the last couple weeks. And it's just like, there is nobody out there. Mm-hmm. And so I go after Bybee, and Bybee goes for, you know, whatever, like 280 or something like that. And I was like, low 200s. And I'm like, okay, I tried to get his teammate Allen, and, you know, I was like $40 short on that. He went close to 200. I'm like, oh, this is too much. Okay. Bryce Miller goes for 378. And I'm like, I'm not paying that much. And then all my guys get dusted out, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Leroy Jenkins. And I spent $375 on Yuri Perez this week. And it just had to happen, man. It's like desperate times, desperate measures. Like, this is the point in the season. We just passed the quarter mark, but it's like, you cannot afford to fall behind. And I hated doing it. I hated doing it. But at some point you just don't have any pitching left. And it's like, dude, you got to do something. Like, you lose Rasmussen, you lose Molly, who are like my number four and number five starters. And it's like, yo, we got to move here. Like, we don't have time to sit around for weeks and weeks and try to patch it together with Rich Hill or whoever it is. Like, I can't do it. Like, you know, I know you did it, but I can't double start Patrick Corbin. Like, we got to spend some money here. So that's why
I two-stepped Jared Schuster this week instead. So, like, I understand that. It's like, you know, it's about your comfort level, right? And I think at the end of the day too, like, there's money on the line, but you want to have fun with this, and you also want to feel like you can support your own choices. And so if it's a decision where you're like, you know what, I don't usually do this, but I need to go do it, then go do it. And if you're thinking, I don't want to do this, but everybody else is doing it, then don't do it. Because if you pay $300 for Yuri Perez when you don't want to, but everybody else is getting a $300 pitcher, and you also, on top of that, don't even think your team really needs it, but you feel like you want one, and then he doesn't pitch well, you're going to kick yourself all season. Not just because you missed, but because you didn't even really want to do it. But you did it anyway, and then still missed on it.
Yeah, and it's a completely different formula this year. I mean, just because George Kirby was one of the only guys going for 250 plus last season, I mean, it's because literally there were a lot less kind of spicy call-ups like that. And this season it's been happening every week. So it's just like a new market trend, and you have to adjust essentially, unless you've literally been just dancing through raindrops with like the perfect group of starting pitchers, and most of us have not been been that lucky. By the way, Eric, how much did you spend for Jared Schuster? Do you recall?
I'll pull it up. I think it was like $11.
See, I like that. Yeah. So think about this.
It was
so,
11 with no backup bid.
Yeah. So people are spending, you know, we're spending $200-$300. Like if Jared Schuster had actually pitched well, you know, that first start up when he was called up, because remember like where he was going in NFBC drafts coming out of spring training, he was having a legit spring. They needed a fifth starter. He was going to, you know, basically earn that rotation spot. And he's a first round pick in the, you know, the real draft, and you know, kind of shit the bed, went down to the minors, came back, shit it again. But yeah, I mean, that's a perfect deal. And I think maybe part of the reason the price was a little down on him, you know, it's kind of like a short term post type guy. It's because it was the at Texas matchup was part of it. So right. Looking at
and he,
that.
And he did okay tonight. He gave up 3 earned runs in 5 innings, but 3 hits, 2 walks. So a flat 1 whip, which is pretty good for the ratios. And it was 1 inning. He gave up 3 runs all in 1 inning. He gave up a 2-run bomb to – he got 2 outs in the inning and then gave up a single and a homer. And then – oh, sorry. It was a single, a double, and then a homer. So, like – overall, not a terrible line. We'll see what happens in Seattle. But again, like I'm trying to get some innings while I've got a bunch of guys on the IL. And, you know, I might get Severino back this weekend, it looks like. So, you know, I won't start him for that. But I'm okay with that. I probably wouldn't have started him the first one off the IL anyway. So, you know.
But like just the fact that somebody like Jared Schuster, who where kind of things didn't go his way to begin the season, and all of a sudden you're getting him 11 unopposed, and he has a rotation spot if he doesn't blow it on the Atlanta Braves with Max Fried out, Kyle Wright out, both 60 DIL. You know, even when Soroka comes out, he still has a locked in spot for essentially one of the best offenses, if not the best in baseball. Like that is a great spend, and these are kind of the things that we are looking for, I think, at each week, that type of player.
Right.
Go, Sam. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, if he goes for, say, 10 and Jury goes for 300, is Jury like a 30 times better investment? Right? Absolutely not. And it's kind of the asymmetrical, the nonlinear kind of nature of fab bidding, right? So it's, you know, I really think living in those value zones in general is what you want to do. And yeah, it's entirely possible that somebody like Schuster, who's a complete afterthought, you got him unopposed, you know, ends up being a far better spend considering what you do with those extra fab dollars than some of these rookie pitchers.
And I think it's this, the flip side of, like, you know, everybody says people are way more informed now, right? You're not able to slip those fab bids in for certain guys. Everybody knows the top prospects. Everybody knows when somebody's on a hot streak or cold streak, or when somebody's facing 6 lefties or, you know, whatever, like everybody has this information now. There's so much content put out there. There are people, you know, I think I'm seeing more this season than ever before, where it's just like tweets filled with stats and, you know, just to like get constant content in front of people's faces. And I think the flip side or the downside of that is like people are just they're constantly trying to add something new, a new player. They're trying to like make use of all this information and not realizing that like, the old information isn't bad information, right? Like everybody in draft season in March, which again, not that long ago, right? Like March 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th was like, whatever you can, you need to get Jared Schuster. He's making this rotation out of spring training. He looked great. He was a first round pick. Like you have to get Jared Schuster. And now a month later, nobody even like acknowledges that he exists. And yes, he hasn't pitched well, but also it's just the idea that like we are so locked in on these guys. And I'm seeing like polls about rest of season value where like now nobody thinks Taj Bradley's good, or like he's not, because he got hit hard a little bit in the minors while they're having him work on his pitch mix. Now everybody would rather have all these other young pitchers rest of season over Taj Bradley. Because why? Because he got sent down once after he looks good at the major league level. but he's not here. So we turn the page and we move on. And I think that's a flaw.
It's like the secret. It's not even a secret. It's like right in front of our faces. And some people can play for years. And I mean, I hate to make fun of this, you know, guy that I've known for 15 years, but he still sends me before the beginning of every football season the same basic, you know, ridiculous questions. I'm like, bro, you've been playing for 15 years. How have you not learned anything? Like, I mean, you know, and it's nobody anybody knows, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, it's just it's the same thing. I was on Waxman's pod the other day with Phil Dussel and, you know, those crazy characters and talking about, you know, how every week there are these gems that we can pick up and they're just like, people just don't care about them. Like it's so much of what have you just done for me? What have you done for me lately? And like you just mentioned, like, it's crazy. You post a poll about Taj Bradley a month ago compared to now. And now he's like dog meat. Like, nobody cares about him. It's really crazy, but it's so easy for us. It should be so easy for us to overcome and just, you know, realize that, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's just right in front of us and we can't be overreacting so much.
Well, I think to tie those two points together, I think we have so much information in front of us, you know, X stats and Statcast and projections and all these things. It's really easy to get too deep into the minutia and kind of blind yourself. And I think, you know, something I've really tried to do, I don't know how good I am at it, but I'm really trying to do is kind of like take the step back and look at the big view. And I think that perspective of Schuster is kind of something like that, Eric. It's just like, hey, let's look at the big view of this. Let's not worry about his pitch shape and, you know, two starts and his stuff plus and, you know, a triple A start at 6,000 feet or whatever. It's like, let's take a step back and look at the whole picture, because sometimes, you know, the old saying, you're missing the forest for the trees. I think we tend to do that just in baseball analysis in general. And, you know, I think it's kind of the curse of being a baseball analyst is people want you to talk about the new stuff. You're trying to find the new angles. You know, you're trying to use stats in a creative way, a new way, you know, use all that stuff. But, you know, sometimes it really doesn't further your cause the way you think that it does. And, you know, I think if you have a strategy and overall concepts and heuristics to guide you instead of looking at every small detail of everything, you know, sometimes that guides you a little bit better.
Yeah, I was just going to say, for me, the correct approach is always a balance of your gut and eye instinct and your experience and what you see on the field and the data and the numbers. It's never one or the other. And I'm always cautious of people that are too much on one end or the other, right?
Yeah, I think so many of us started playing this game without the data and the numbers, and then have sometimes like forgotten, like 10 years ago, how were you making waiver claims? You were seeing who was doing well. You were trying to watch if you could, you know, and you couldn't always because there wasn't access to every single game. But you were trying to see who was doing well off of who, how regularly were they playing? And then if you could watch them, what does the swing look like? What is, you know, stuff like that where, you know, I think that too often we get sucked in by the numbers. And I, you know, last week we had Bubba on our podcast on Catcher's Corner, and he's a Giants fan. And we were talking about Casey Schmidt. And I mentioned, like, in the debut, Casey Schmidt came up, he hit that home run. And I was immediately like, I love this swing. There's so much torque in his swing. He got so much force and power through the zone and he crushed that ball. And I was like, I think this dude has some thump in his bat. And then everybody's like, ooh, his minor league hard hit data. He only had 20% hard hits. He's not a power hitter. And he might not be a power hitter per se. Like, he's not a Jorge Soler, but like, if you watch the swing and you believe in the swing, I mean, I think that there's more power in the swing than the numbers would indicate. And I picked up a few shares of him because of that. And so far, so good. I mean, who knows if it'll last. But I do think, like, you can't talk yourself out of something that you saw with your own eyes if you believe it, because the numbers don't back it up.
Yeah, so this is perfect because we were going to talk about basically recency bias and, yeah, looking at some of the hitter on the hitter side of things. And exactly this, like, I'm curious, when you see certain players like right now underperforming, how are you reconciling in your head based on what they've done in the past, what's happening now? Sometimes we're thinking, oh yeah, maybe they're hiding an injury. Sometimes that is the case. Sometimes they're just, you know, they're just done, right? Like, you know, I do want to ask you guys about Jose Abreu. But like, how do you reconcile something in your head starting with like a Jake Fraley, who it team context wise, right? He's on the Reds. It's a good hitter park. He's, you know, he has good plate patience. He's always like, you know, been a 12%+ walk guy. He's sitting right in the middle of that lineup. I think he's among the RBI leaders, like top 20 in the league. And then you look at his Statcast data going back to last season. And now even this season, he's near the bottom of everything. He's hitting like 85 mile per hour exit velocity. It's like a 26% hard hit rate, like, you know, all this stuff. But I mean, but he's fantasy worthy, right? So how do you explain, and we can talk about this in other players, but like Jake Fraley specifically, and how do you assess his future value, his rest of season value, whether it be for a trade or, you know, for fantasy purposes, based on all of the, you know, those two sort of conflating things?
I think that it's always worth saying, I don't know, and deferring to something that knows better, i.e. projections, right? The first thing I ever do is go and look at projections for a player. And that doesn't mean that's the end all be all, but the projections are going to know better than me in terms of like, what's kind of our average expectation for this player moving forward. And then I think you kind of like start basing off of that. But I think what I don't want to do is start double counting things, right? I don't want to go look at the projections for the bad X for somebody like Fraley rest of the season. I think the bad X has him at like 12 homers, 14 steals. That's solid. It's really solid. Now you're going to want to make manual adjustments to that, considering lineup spot, et cetera. Obviously, if he's hitting third and playing on a regular basis, not platooning, you know, those kind of counting stat numbers will probably improve based on, you know, what the projections are thinking of. But, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to double count that stuff. You don't want to like go look at something that incorporates that and then go to StatCast and be like, oh, but he's not hitting the ball hard. Yo, dude, the Bad X is incorporating that shit. Like, you don't need to double count it. So I guess what I'm saying, I'm not saying the projections are the only thing you should look at, but you don't need to like go into all this minute stuff. You end up double counting. You end up not seeing the forest for the trees. What I see is a guy who's projected for double digit power, double digit speed. He's hitting third for the Reds. He's a okay player. And at the end of the day, I think that's a fair projection based on him. And that's kind of how I'm going to value him.
Yeah, and I think if you do look at the other stats, I agree with everything Sammy said. And if you do look at the stats, I think look at the stats with a purpose, right? So when I, you know, and this is the, you know, the English teacher in me, but like when I'm looking at stats, I'm trying to tell myself a story. I'm not just saying, okay, what's his swinging strike rate? Okay, what's his O-swing? What's his barrel rate? Whatever. So I look at Fraley and it's like, okay, you could see a career low, you know, strikeout rate, career high barrel rate. Like those are things that jump out when you look at it and you're like, okay, you know, career high max EV. Those are things that are interesting. But then I look down and I'm like, okay, career high O swing, highest zone swing and swing percentage in general since his rookie year. So he's swinging the bat a lot more. He's pulling the ball a lot more. He's lifting the ball a lot more. So this is a guy, and then I'm like, okay, he plays in Cincinnati. So he plays in a hitter's ballpark. So a guy who moves to a hitter's ballpark, who starts swinging, who starts being more aggressive, lifting the ball, pulling the ball more, is a guy who, to me, is trying to maximize power in a hitter's park. And then I'm looking at, okay, so that's also why if you look at the Bat X projections, they would have him hitting a career high home runs this year. That's why you're getting a little bit of the, you know, he's chasing too many pitches outside of the zone. His O contact is really high too. So he's hitting probably pitches he shouldn't even be swinging at.
And that's why the average exit velocity is maybe not where you'd want to be, right?
Exactly.
Because it's, right. Because it's just a median. So he's going to be reaching for some balls and hitting them, you know, 45 miles an hour or whatever, it's going to bring the average down. But to your point, what are we looking for? We're looking for impact hits. right?
Right. And so that's why the XBA is low and the X slug is low, because like there are some balls he shouldn't be swinging at, but his swinging strike rate is not higher than it's ever, it's not higher than it's been. So he doesn't have like some egregious strikeout issues, as we also saw from the strikeout numbers. So in my head, I can tell myself a story based on the numbers. I'm not just pulling random numbers out, where I'm saying I've got a guy who still has a career high zone contact rate. So I have a guy who's making decent contact, trying to pull and lift the ball in a hitter's park. He also has 14 to 15 stolen base speed on top of it. So if I'm getting a 260 hitter who maybe goes 17, 18, 19 homers and 16, 17, 18 stolen bases at the end of the year, like that seems feasible for Fraley based on everything we're seeing. And that sounds great to me.
Oh, by the way, I benched him last minute on Friday. I think it was like, I was like walking the dog. I was like double checking my lineups and I forgot what it was, but there was just somebody else I thought maybe was better. Popped him on the bench and I think he hit two home runs that night and then like another one the next day. It's, by the way, that's pretty tilting when that happens.
Yeah.
I cut Jordan Diaz in my AL Tout League to activate Michael Brantley because he was getting activated off the disabled list on Monday. And then Brantley had a setback and Diaz hit three home runs on that Monday game. I was like, this is great.
We're showing our sob stories. Jordan Diaz, for whatever reason, I was into him that week. I bid teens, I think like 14, 17, unopposed, got him. He did jack for that week. I think I held him another week, benched him, dropped him, and then the three home run game. That's baseball, right? I mean, it's just how it goes.
It's not just that he did jack. He sat for six straight games. He wasn't in the starting lineup for six straight games. So nobody, and that's the thing, right? Like we talk about all of these like strategies and what you should and shouldn't do and how you should identify stuff. And then sometimes just the most random stuff happens and whatever. There's nothing you can do about it, right? It's part of the nature of fantasy baseball in general.
I was going to ask. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sammy.
I was just going to say, speaking of stories, I think you'd mentioned Jose Abreu earlier, Vlad.
Yeah.
I mean, when you tell yourself the story, maybe you start off with a hypothesis, like, is Jose Abreu washed? Because it's really easy to look at Jose Abreu and be like, yo, this guy's big dust. And you look at all his Statcast stuff, his average EV, his launch angle, his barrel percentage, his hard hit percentage, everything is down significantly, like a big standard deviation. And I mean, the guy's what, like 35, 36 probably?
This is the part where we people in our late 30s, early 40s talk trash about somebody who's 36. But here
that is correct, yes. but it's really, as somebody who's gone through a degradation in his physical skills, I can say from experience, Jose Abreu really might be dust, right? I mean, we're a quarter of the way through the season. We're 40 games through. It's going to be a small sample no matter how you cut it, right? You shouldn't just make overarching, like, oh, for sure, definite conclusions. But when you tell yourself the story of everything looks bad, the guy looks bad to the eye, and he's old, all these things together, that might be a situation where you tell yourself the story of, okay, I think he's dust. I look at all the Statcast stuff. It looks dust. Yeah, call a spade, dude's dust.
That's
and it's, more it, than just Statcast, like career low pull rate, and he's hitting worse on the fastballs than he's hit in years. He's seeing slightly more fastballs, not anything crazy, but more than before. But like hitting 236 against fastballs, not pulling the ball, like seeing more fastballs than before. That also tells me, okay, pitchers are like, if I'm 95, 96, 97, whatever, like you can't catch up to this anymore.
He can't beat me. Yeah.
And he can't. And so like you have all the Statcast stuff and then you have some of these other peripheral numbers too. And it's just, I've gone beyond, hey, you should try to like sell Jose Abreu and get something. I've just gone to like, I think you can cut him. I really do. I think you just move on and call it a day.
Yeah, the wild thing. Nobody's giving you anything. Everybody knows.
The wild thing is, so he has no homers this season so far, but he had one in the second half last season. It's mind blowing. And you guys both played baseball, played some professional. Like, I can't even, you guys can probably explain it better. How does a guy who has been among the top run producers in baseball all these years, like, how do you explain it, right? I mean, and now he's on a team with even better team context. I don't know, maybe some people adjust to teams. How can he just be dust?
I mean, it's very easy to explain, right? Baseball is a game of millimeters. It's a game of fractions of a second when it comes to hitting. And those fractions of a second mean everything. And when you get older, you lose some of the reaction time. And it's just like, you know, I think about it in football terms too. Running backs age like that, right? And it's a half step. It's a half step and a hold that makes all the difference in the world, right? Todd Gurley lost a half step and all of a sudden he's out of the league. It's the difference between the best running back in the league and not. It's the same thing for hitters. These fractions of a second mean everything. And to Eric's point, if somebody who's gassing 95 plus can get you there, I mean, fastballs, you look at the league contest, fastballs are being thrown at a smaller frequency than they ever have before because hitters can catch up to 100 and 101, right? Pitchers are throwing more and more breaking stuff all the time because those are the pitches that really mess hitters up. If you have a hitter that can't hit a fastball, you have a hitter that can't hit.
Yeah. I think the simple thing also on top of what Sammy said is just Father Time is undefeated. And that's how he can turn to dust because he turned to dust. You know, there are some guys who, you know, we saw Nelson Cruz stave it off for a really long time. And it's not,
maybe with a little help, who knows?
Yeah. But it's not always, it's not always possible. And like it just takes a lot. It takes a lot to not only stay in physical shape to play all these games, but to make sure that your reflexes are where they're at to be able to hit everything that's coming at you. And then also, who knows, like, this one is going out on a limb of being like, maybe also you have an older guy who needs kind of, you know, the pitch clock is not working in his favor, can't step out of the box, can't gather himself, can't, you know, kind of like whatever he needs to do to kind of like check himself and get back in. And maybe he's just getting beat and beat and beat and he can't, like, I don't know, can't climb out. There's also mental sides of it too. He might also be, we don't know what's going on through guys' heads as well. Like, he may have also wondered if he should hang it up, if he's done, if whatever, and then all of a sudden the struggles are happening like that and it's just kind of like exacerbating these issues. You know, I talked to Steve Vogt before, when he was retiring, and he was talking about how before he made the announcement, he spent most of the year thinking about whether this should be the year or not. Because when you get to the end of the year of your career, like, that's what you're thinking. Is like, is this the year? Do I have another? Do I have? And, you know, that has to also factor in when you're hitting like crap and everybody's talking about you hitting like crap.
Let me ask you guys about a couple other guys just struggling in terms of batting average. So you've got Brandon Lau hitting right around the Mendoza. He's got 7 homers. He's hitting the middle of that lineup. Not a guy we wouldn't necessarily expect a high batting average from. Kyle Schwarber, 9 homers. He's hitting 177. And then a couple other guys here. Carlos Correa at 201, usually a really solid contact hitter, usually a guy that'll get you 270 plus. And then this one is really intriguing to me, and it's something going on here in Houston. By the way, with Houston, I just have this feeling that Jose Altuve comes in and just like saves everybody. There's just like this energy. It just like everything gets going again in Houston. They move up in the division. But nevertheless, Alex Bregman, I think there are only 3 players over the last 4 years with a walks to strikeout over 1. And of course, Juan Soto is the man in that department, like way above everyone else. The other couple of guys there, Luis Arraez, obviously, Yandy Diaz, who's been excellent, and then Alex Bregman. So Alex Bregman has been struggling immensely this season, hitting 212 at the moment, hitting there in a prime spot of the lineup. Maybe he really is missing Altuve. But this is interesting. So this is a dude that usually walks a little bit more than he strikes out. Incredible plate discipline. But it's even more pronounced this season. A 14% walk rate, striking out at only 9% of the time. Is Bregman another guy? I mean, he's too young to be washed necessarily. But what's your sort of opinion on Alex Bregman, I guess, before the season started and what you're seeing now and what you're expecting?
I was never huge into Bregman before the season started. I mean, I definitely didn't see this coming. I wasn't avoiding him, but I think, like, you know, that 2018-2019 power surge that we saw, I think everybody has come to terms with the fact that that's not who he is, and he was probably a 20 homer bat to begin with. But I think what you were thinking was, okay, 20 homers, 260, 270 average in a good lineup, you know, runs and RBIs, all that kind of stuff added onto it. But, you know, if you're not hitting for a lot of power and you don't steal bases, your margin for production is slim, right? Because you really need the help in the other areas. And for me, like, when I look at the profile, there's nothing egregious that stands out. He's still making tons of contact. He has elite zone contact. He has elite swinging strike rates. He's not really, like, chasing anything out of the zone more aggressively. He's not, like, there's nothing in it that says anything is broken to me. His line drive, ground balls, fly balls, almost exactly the same as last year. The pull rate is a little bit lower, but so much of it is, like, he was the guy he was last year. And from the metrics. And when I watch him, you know, I've seen a couple Astros games recently where I'm not like, oh, that swing is long, or, oh, he's getting beat on fastballs, or whatever it is. So to me, like, I just kind of feel like he's a guy who will figure it out and be back up to 260, 270. But, you know, he's not that 290, 25, 30 home run guy.
I mean, I wish I had something to add to this. I don't really, because I think it's exactly right. Your expectations for Bregman should have been what they were, right? He kind of reminds me of, like, a younger Anthony Rendon type character. Like, Bregman has always had this elite, even when he was in the minor leagues, and it's something I really liked about him as a prospect, is he had this elite walk to strikeout ratio, right? The guy is just a savant when it comes to, you know, controlling the strike zone. And, you know, he to Eric's point, I mean, he had those smash years in kind of the happy fun ball era. I think he hit his 41 in 2019. But he's a guy that really, when it comes down to it, he's a zone control guy who is a contact hitter who will probably hit around 20 home runs. And so if you have that expectation, great. As we've seen him age, I think he's 29 years old now. We've seen him, and I think the Astros team in general, kind of turn away from a lot of stolen bases. You know, we've seen it with Altuve as well. He used to be like a 40-50 steal guy, right? And then he's gotten it around 30. He's really ramped that down to like 10 a season. But Bregman's speed, you used to be able to count on him for like 10 to 15. He's kind of a guy, like, you're going to get a handful out of it. And yeah, your margins for error are really low there. So he's like an okay fantasy player, and that's all he ever was. But I guarantee you, by the end of the year, he'll have his 260 and his 20 home runs, and it'll be fine. But he's not going to be some, like, great fantasy player. I don't think those are his days anymore. And
I'm thinking,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking back. Carlos Correa, if you guys recall, I mean, he was first overall pick in Houston, and he swiped 27 bags in his first couple years. He was like, oh, you get a full season out of Correa, man. He's your, like, first overall pick. And he just stopped running. As a matter of fact, he hasn't stolen a base since 2019.
Yeah, I think he had that really bad ankle injury when he was a prospect coming up. And he kind of, like, shut it down then. But it's tough for stolen bases to translate. Like, dude, I think of a guy like Yoan Moncada. Yoan Moncada, like, stole, I mean, some insane amount of bases in the minor leagues. And it was like, oh, snap, I can't wait for this guy to come up. And then he came up and he's like, okay, I'll steal, like, five. Like, whatever. So it's always a little bit of a guessing game when it comes to how these will translate when it's not, like, a straight-up burner guy. But, you know, I mean, just following up on Correa, I think Correa is going to be just fine as well. Like, if you look at all his underlying stuff, like, there is literally nothing in his profile to say, oh, my gosh, I need to be worried about Carlos Correa. But he's a little bit Alex Bregman-ish in the sense that it's like, this guy, and it's funny, when he came up as a prospect, I mean, Zips had him. Zips was like, yo, this guy's like Hall of Fame. And that's the nature of projecting prospects, right? It's really an exact science, but he's going to be that solid guy. He doesn't run anymore. He's going to hit you 20 to 25, probably maybe some outlier seasons where he hits a few more. But at the end of the day, he's going to have a real Bregman-esque profile when it comes to fantasy stats. And, you know, the other two guys, the lefties you were referencing, the Love Below, as I like to call them, and Schwarber. I mean, those guys, like, you can literally just look at their BABIP, which is kind of crazy because, you know, the league expected BABIP for left-handed hitters, they anticipated it would go up about 4 points. These guys are about 200 right now, and neither of them are expected to be like big average guys. So, you know, when you look at their hard hit stuff and you look at the BABIPs and you're like, okay, this BABIP is just abnormally low to the point where it's probably unsustainably low. And you realize that we're 40 games into a season and batting average is a ratio stat that's highly kind of volatile, especially in the early stages. My expectations for both of those players actually hasn't moved. I don't think any.
But I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Sammy, but your expectations for both those players were low batting average and lots of home runs, right?
That is correct. I mean, yes.
Like, Brandon Lau is a 210, 220 hitter. Like, that's who he is, right?
With a bad back, too.
Right. I mean, you know, I think we established that the last few years that, like, yeah, he popped 260, 270 or whatever it was, like, early in his career. And then he started to turn into a power first guy a couple years ago. And now, like, his fly ball rate is 10% higher than last year. It's the highest it's ever been. Like, he is leaning into that power first profile that we've seen for a few years now, but he's not swinging and missing any more than he has in the past. His, you know, plate discipline metrics don't look any different than they've been in the last few years. He actually is making a career high zone contact rate by like a significant amount. So this is who he is. He's going to go on a hot streak in a little bit and get his batting average back up to 210. And everybody's going to be like, all right, Brandon Lau, 210 and, you know, like 12 home runs early in the season. And that's what I drafted. And that is, I mean, you know, I think there's some risk to it because it's the Rays and, you know, they've already platooned him and they might sit him if he's not hitting. But I think we're just seeing like guys kind of be who we thought they were, but we wanted them to be something else. And we're a little disappointed that they're not something else.
Yeah. You look at Schwarber and you're like 46 homers, 10 steals, like fifth round, I got to have it. And it's like, okay, yeah. Like that time passed. It already happened. You're probably not getting it.
Yeah. So I have one more for you guys. I want to kind of put you on the spot here. I have four super breakout hitters so far this year. And I wanted you to, I did want to preface this. We didn't really get into this, but I just wanted to mention how I'm not really big on the rest of season questions, just because I really kind of micromanage fantasy a little bit more. I just think there's just so much more volatility in terms of how flexible managers are with their starting lineups, with pulling guys from the minors, you know, moving guys around in the lineups, you know, rotations, bullpens, roles change so much, injuries occur. That's why I don't really do like, you know, rest of season rankings and things like that. It's not really a cop-out. It's just my philosophy and how I do it. But flipping that script, I wanted to throw four guys out there and I wanted you to give me your rest of season ranking on these four guys. The first guy is most likely the Oakland A's representative in the All-Star game. Actually, Esturia Ruiz probably will be as well. Might have two A's there. But Brent Rooker is one. James Outman is cooled off a little bit, strikeout guy. But obviously a nice part of that lineup there with the Dodgers. He's breaking out. Josh Lowe, not playing as much as those that have lots of shares of Josh Lowe would like it. But I don't know. It's been working out, maybe for the better. And then Jared Kelnick hitting right there in the middle of that lineup in Seattle. And again, things could be so fluid there, right? He can cool off, and you know, Teoscar's been hitting seventh, like Teoscar kind of hitting third and fourth at some point. But those four guys, if I were to ask you, rank them, somebody asked you to rank them for the rest of the season, how would you rank them?
I'll take the bullet here, Eric.
Thank you. Appreciate bullet that.
And you know, prepared for the roast of listeners here. I'm gonna go Kelenic, Josh Lowe, Rooker, and James Outman. And I want to be fair that I actually like all these guys quite a bit. The reality is, you know, ball players don't, they, and with these players specifically, you can tell baseball players don't progress linearly, right? They jump up in and make big adjustments and change very, very, very quickly. And I think in all these cases, these guys have. With Outman, I'm a little I think the guy's freaking great. He's one of my big draft regrets that I didn't get him in either main because I was really targeting him late. His stats in the minors the last couple of years were pretty insane. But I can see him being a guy with his insane strikeout rate and a team that really likes to play platoon roles, that his playing time could go down the stretch, particularly if he gets cold. I think he's just kind of a higher variant type of player. He'll have a lot of variance in his profile. Kelenic's that guy. Kelenic and Lowe are kind of similar to me in the fact that they were both really, really good prospects who completely fell on their faces and are now kind of getting a fresh start. Obviously, Kelenic's been really cold for the last couple of weeks, and everyone's like, oh, snap, is it old Kelenic? And so putting him first actually makes me a little queasy, so I don't feel super confident in that. But, you know, the guy has power, huge power, has made changes to approach. He's got speed, and he hits in the middle of a lineup, and he plays every day. That's awesome. So Lowe's issue for me is obviously the platoon angle, and the Rays probably won't stop doing that. But I also feel like at some point, I mean, you know, they're playing Brandon Lau every day. It's like, yo, you got a better Lowe on this team. You know, he you can only contain him for so long. And this is a team that lost a couple of pitchers that really needs to find value elsewhere, and they will. But man, I mean, Lowe, he's not a guy I have it at all. I have him in like one league, and I'm like, man, I wish I had more. So he's pretty awesome. So that's kind of the way I feel about those guys. And, you know, I think for all their different reasons, it's really cool to see some young guys who have been kind of cast out or not believed in for a lot of different reasons kind of just come back, you know, rise from the ashes and really make their impact on the season. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah, I agree with Sammy in the sense of like I'm interested in all of these players. And I think they're pretty similar in value depending on what your team needs. I have them ranked Lowe, Rooker, Outman, Kelenic. And it might be a little biased for me because like I had way too many shares of Josh Lowe last year. And then when he got demoted, I dropped him. And then when they brought him back up, I picked him up like everywhere again. And it just never hit. And so I bailed too easily this year. And that's like another lesson, right? Of letting one bad year or one, you know, one miss kind of like cloud you from a player that you liked. I talked myself into every reason why the Rays wouldn't give him a shot and didn't really even acknowledge what he was doing in the spring because I was like, we've seen this, we've done this, whatever. And I just was like a little too rigid about it. And I missed getting shares this year. I regret it. I think from a talent standpoint, he's the only one of this group that's like, has like 30-20 upside. I mean, that's like if he hits, not this year, that's like his peak as a player. But I mean, you know, there's legitimate power, there's legitimate speed. He has swing and miss and is maybe over aggressive. All those things are true, but he's making some real improvements and selling out for a little more power. And I just kind of believe in the raw tools there. And then Rooker is another guy, like, I have written way too many words about Brent Rooker. Like, dude, way good. Too many words for
he's
somebody,
super good.
For somebody
who, fast too.
who was terrible coming into this year, right? But, like, when he was on Minnesota and was hitting, you know, 20-plus homers in the minors, you know, I had him on some watch lists. And then last year, he got traded to the Royals at the deadline, and I wrote about him as a deep league waiver wire pickup. And I was like, you know, I have the article in front of me right now that when I looked it up, and it says Brent Rooker has never put it together at the big league level, but he's a career 265 minor league hitter with an 893 OPS. He was hitting 273 with 19 home runs in 61 games for the Padres AAA team. So I may be foolish, but I still believe there could be some late bloomer appeal here. And he needed a chance, and he needed to make some small changes to his game, which he did. But this guy has always hit for power. Back in college, he hit for power. In the minors, he's hit for power. He has kind of like reined in the aggressiveness outside of the zone, a skosh. But he's also just playing every single day and trying to jack home runs. And he has the natural power to do that at the Coliseum. And so it's not like, it doesn't matter where he plays. Mm-hmm. So is he what's he hitting right now? Is he a 298 hitter? No, he's not a 298 hitter. He'll end the season around 230, 235. But he might hit 30 home runs when it's all said and done. So, I think there's a lot of value there. And then Outman, I like all these guys. I think that Kelnick has the biggest hole in the profile where, as of right now, the pitcher's adjusted to him and he's slumping. And we've seen him take a while to adjust back. So do I think he can adjust back as a talent? Sure. Might that happen in July or August? It might. I mean, and, you know, if Seattle is contending, who knows, right? And who knows what they're going to do with that lineup. But he's a talented player who has all kinds of ability. And if I have him on my team, I'm not cutting him or, you know, freaking out. I'm benching him and, you know, seeing if he can right the ship.
Vlad, who do you have more shares of, Lowe or Outman?
Oh, I have more Lowe. He's my most owned, most rostered. I got
I have so much FOMO.
45%. And it's because of the opposite. So I do that with certain players, Eric, like you mentioned. Like, you know, I try not to, but it happens. And I did the exact opposite with Lowe. I was stubbornly believing it. It was just, I did the same thing early last season. I spent 250 on him in OCs. And then, you know, and then cut him. He was, you know, worthless. And then again, picked him up later in the season, just kept buying, believing. And then my text thread and other people like just, you know, just basically just like, he sucks. He's, you know, he's not good. And then I followed him so closely in the spring and watching him and Luke Raley were battling for that last spot. And just like the guys both kept hitting. And I saw his, you know, plate approach, remembered his profile as a prospect. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to grab him. Even in OCs, just grab him 30th round. Nobody wants him. And just hope for the best. Nevertheless, I agree with Sammy's order. I would still have him third only because the Rays will always Ray. And he just will not get that, you know, the quantity of, you know, of plate appearances to get there. I do have Kelnick first. I think it's really close. I think those first three guys are pretty close, but him, Rooker second, and then Outman last only because I just had some thought, like I just, you know, seen all the strikeouts lately and I think he's great. I think he will have a few more hot streaks through the season, but if he gets really cold at the same time as like a David Peralta gets hot, Dave Roberts will have no problem. You'll start to see Outman going from playing every day against lefties and righties to only playing against righties, and like anything can happen. So that's my concern there. And then with Brent Rooker, there's a little element in here that why I really like him, why I'm kind of moving on to him. And I have like one share of him. It is the fact that I can see him getting traded to a team and kind of being like this year's Brandon Drury, quite possibly.
I think while we're talking about these guys who have resurrected their careers, we need to at least bring in, he's not on this level, but Nick Senzel just hit another home run.
Oh man.
He's, you know, he came in to today. Wasn't, you know, not crazy, but, you know, 276, three homers, three steals. But like when he's healthy, he's shown some intriguing skills still, right? I mean, he has great contact, doesn't really strike out, great home ballpark. They can move him around the field. We know that he can run a little bit. Like, I don't think he has the upside of, you know, the Outman and Lowe if they put it all together. He's not, like, you know, hitting 25 and stealing 15. But, like, here's another guy that, like, everybody gave up on and nobody wants to get hurt by him again. So, like, nobody's really buying into this right now. But, you know, he was hitting second before they called up McClain. But now he's hitting, like, sixth in a good home ballpark, going to play six games a week for them, maybe move around the field. Like I, you know, respect to Nick Senzel, hope he stays healthy, gives us some fantasy value and gives himself, you know, that the one healthy MLB year.
Funny. I could never quit him until I quit him. And then I did, you know, grab a couple shares here for cheap, but you know, I was part of the crew making fun of him preseason. Yeah. I mean, you know, trying to post some gifs of him, you know, and never coming back and not staying healthy, but hey, it's baseball.
So my Senzel story is in the shared main event that I have with Yancey. We we picked up Nick Senzel for a dollar. And I was, it was not my choice. Yancey's like, oh, we got to get Nick Senzel, you know, this and that. I'm like, fuck that. Like, this guy sucks, bro. So we pick him up for a dollar. We drop Alec Thomas the week before he goes for like 55 bucks. We drop Nick Senzel. We have Nick Senzel for a week, and then we drop him. And we drop him for Robbie Grossman. Pretty good. Then we end up dropping Robbie Grossman for somebody else who I don't even know about. Bottom line is we have somebody who sucks and we don't have Grossman or Nick Senzel. And every time these guys, Nick Senzel just hit a home run, man. The tilt is coursing through my veins right now. I just can't stand it. I need to put down the fab. Just stop fabbing. Just leave the team alone.
It's crazy. It's like DFS, right? Like sometimes you set a lineup and then you're like, you're good. You feel good about it. It was like your original lean before you even got into the data. And then like, yeah, let me check that lineup 3 minutes before. And you take out the guy that ends up hitting two home runs.
Oh, I actually looked this up. I did a study and 92% of the time you swap a guy out with less than 3 minutes to go, he hits a home run. It's crazy.
Love it. Guys, this was amazing. This is exactly why I think this is perfect. The three of us here, basically the two of you guys with your baseball experience playing, your analytical side, and guys from each coast, parents, young parents like myself. So stoked to have you guys both on. Thank you so much. I would love to have you back again sometime soon. Just real quick before we get out of here, let us know what you guys are up to and where people can follow you. Eric?
Yeah, so you can reach me on Twitter at SamskyNYC. You can check out my fantasy work at RotoBaller. I also plug, I have a Substack every Sunday. I have something called the Samulski Sunday Tribune, where I go through the stat leaders from the week that has just passed and try to give some context of like, you know, yes, this guy hit four home runs. Is he worth your money? Why or why not? I look at minor league leaders. I look at two-start pitchers. I look at minor league stuff plus leaders, things like that. So there's a whole bunch of free content in there. And then there's more stuff behind the paywall if you felt like you wanted more stuff or wanted to support. So that's always up on my Twitter, and that you can find that on Substack. So you should check that out as well. And if you like the New York Giants or the New York Knicks, you can read my day job, my journalism at AM New York. So you can check that out. Wrote about why the Knicks should fire Tom Thibodeau today. So you can check that. And yeah.
God, I have way, way less stuff to plug than Eric. Just wait till you have a second kid, bro. It's all over. You can follow me on Twitter at SammyReadFI, and I do a little poker podcast these days called Readman Weep. Check that out if you like poker.
Guys, thank you so much again for coming on. I look forward to everybody hearing this show, and I wish you all the best of luck the rest of this fantasy season. For Eric Samulski and Sammy Reed, and what's up, Maddie Davis? We love you, brother. I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll catch you next week.